This is special programming from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. It's been 21 weeks since the campfire started. Tonight on After Paradise, we hear from a doctor at Adventist Health who tells us about the hospital's new cancer care center in Chico. We hear about a group who's meeting weekly for support and to talk about the redesign of Paradise. And we hear from survivors of the camp and car fires about whether or not their perspectives have changed on climate change after the fire. We also look into your questions about insurance and hear from an organization who can help with all the insurance questions you have. Again, we want you to drive the coverage of this program. If you have any questions about post-campfire recovery, you can submit them on our website at mynspr.org. For Thursday, April 4th, 2019, this is After Paradise. The campfire destroyed nearly everything in its path that day in November, nearly 5 months ago, including most of the town's hospital. Adventist Health is now scattered throughout the county. For months, staff of its cancer center have had to drive hours to visit patients who have been displaced. But now they'll be able to see those patients in Chico, as a new Adventist Health Cancer Care Center has just opened. Oncologist and hematologist Dr. Sam Maj is leading the new facility, which he says has been up and running for about 2 weeks.
We are very excited that we could finally open a cancer center in Butte County after the aftermath of the fire in Paradise. And a lot of patients, they're going to their most disaster time of their life with fighting cancer and also displaced at the same time from the fire and middle of their treatment. So if we finally came to a place that we can take care of them easier so they do not have to travel hours to get the treatment that they used to.
Since the fire, patients of the cancer center have had to travel up to 50 miles to receive treatment.
Most of our patients had to travel at least an hour to go, an hour to come back, so 2 hours. As you can understand, sometimes treatment for cancer could be very brutal and could have a lot of side effects. And on top of it, losing their houses, what they were comfortable with, and all of a sudden they have to go through that on top of the stresses that they have with the cancer and physical and emotional distress that they go through.
Maj says the new facility will be in partnership with the UC Davis Cancer Care Network and will offer more options for patients than the previous center. This includes access to UC Davis's clinical trials and an option for patients to have their cases discussed during virtual tumor board meetings.
So the whole idea is to streamline the best care possible, no matter where patients are. So to complete the care, the cancer patients have to go through a lot of physicians, a lot of department, a lot of specialties. So to streamline on that, so this affiliation, this work with UC Davis would open a lot of doors for them. Tumor board is a discussion of high-level specialists that are specializing in specific type of cancers. So we could have them discuss these cases before patients, even so the patient don't have to travel that far and they can just stay here and they can get exact opinion from the specialists far away and we can get those treatment done closer to their home.
He says the recovery process has also been difficult for the center staff.
But we are coming along. I always feel that patients and the staff, we are in one family. So this family coming along and coming together at the end of the day. It's been rough for the last 6 months, but things are slowly coming together.
Maj says the new center has already been seeing patients and they are very happy to have a closer facility.
It's extremely exciting for them and for us to see how many years this patient have been through so many stress and life-changing situations, not only for cancer, but also the fire that has done to them. So they are very excited that they don't have to travel so far away and they could get even better quality treatment that they could get otherwise.
The Adventist Health Cancer Care Center is currently taking new patients. They will hold a ribbon-cutting ceremony to celebrate the reopening. It will take place Tuesday, April 9th at 4 in the afternoon at the new facility on Declaration Drive. Over the last few months, you've been asking a lot of questions about insurance. Questions like, are there areas and properties in Paradise that will be uninsurable because of high fire danger risk? And if we rebuild, will anyone insure us and for how much? We're working to find specific answers to these questions, but have been in contact with an organization that can provide direct, individualized help. NSPR's Nicole Camarda has more.
United Policyholders is an organization that does a lot to help people get the insurance money they're owed to help them rebuild. Amy Bach is the executive director.
We are a nonprofit that for 27 years has been a source of help for disaster victims and a voice for anyone who has insurance issues and needs guidance. We are the advocate for the consumer. So we have three programs, and the one relevant to our topic today is it's called the Roadmap to Recovery. And that's a program we offer in areas that have been impacted by disasters. And we go in and we do workshops over a period of a year or two and surveys. And we give people guidance and strategies to help them get through the claim process and get all the money that they are entitled to.
When survivors start to think about whether and how to rebuild, Bach says recovering money from an insurance policy is an important step. And UPH can help people understand their policies and how to talk to their insurance companies.
Each person's house and possessions were unique, and each person's insurance is somewhat unique. So their house was what it was, their possessions were what they were, their insurance is what it is, and then there are unique aspects of how their insurance company is behaving. So some people, you know, the insurance company assigns an adjuster, and there is the luck of the draw as to whether that person is nice or rude or smart or slow or inexperienced or very experienced. And that can really affect the outcome. But I think, you know, the most important thing is that each person's house had a value, right? The cost of putting their house back and replacing their stuff is unique to them. And so, you know, I think just for your listeners, you know, one thing that's really important to know is that people don't think about insurance, you know, ever unless they've actually had something bad happen, right? It's just an annoyance to have to pay the premiums. And people generally just do not put a lot of time into thinking about it. And that's just how it is. The problem is that after a loss, a big loss, insurance is incredibly important. And suddenly people have a steep learning curve to, you know, to get from where most people are in their minds, which is either it's like a black and white, people think, oh, I have insurance or I don't have insurance. But of course, it's really not after a disaster, it's much more complicated. It's okay, you have insurance, but do you have enough? And the answer for 2/3 of the people is no. So a lot of what happens after disasters is people find out, you know, the hard way that, yeah, they had insurance, but A, it's might not be enough to get them back where they were. And B, you have to work to get the money. Right. And that comes as a big shock to a lot of people.
UPH offers guidance on how to access free assistance and advice from government organizations, insurance companies, and even people who've already been through something like this.
These are people who've been there, done that, you know, lost a home in a wildfire and all the pain that comes along with that. And then they got through it somehow with some help from United Policyholders. And now they are volunteers with us.
She says the conversation runs deeper than just how much money property owners will be able to get back from their insurance claims. And if they do decide to rebuild, there are still some questions about whether and how insurance companies will cover these new homes in potentially fire-prone or dangerous areas.
One of the things about the campfire is it's record-breaking on a lot of levels. You know, we've never seen 18,000 homes incinerated, right? You know, homes and businesses in one event in that short a period of time. And then another is that, you know, the infrastructure of the town has been wiped out. So there's a lot of kind of first-time issues here, you know, like, will the county even let me rebuild here? And even if they do, when will there be basic utility service again. I think the decision has been made to rebuild the city, but how quickly is anyone's guess? So I don't know that anyone's going to be told, no, you cannot rebuild. Now, there will be people who will have a very hard time finding insurance. You know, we still have a competitive private market for insurance. People can generally, you know, find coverage somewhere through somebody. And then if they can't, we have a backstop. We have the California FAIR Plan. So I am positive that there are people in the Paradise area that are going to have trouble finding insurance, but everyone at some point should be able to get insurance through the FAIR Plan, unless they didn't get enough insurance money to make it safe and habitable, in which case an insurance company will say, well, no one's going to insure you, including the FAIR Plan, because the house is not safe.
Bach says her organization is still in close contact with up to 1,000 families impacted by the campfire. They continue to run workshops, make their resource library available, and hold legal clinics. In partnership with the Department of Insurance, Bach says United Policyholders isn't going anywhere.
You know, we're here for the duration. You know, we've got a survey open right now. We've got a 6-month survey that we are doing of specifically to get information about how people are doing with their insurance so that we can continue tailoring our service offerings to meet the needs. And, you know, it's our privilege to do that. And we're looking forward to this, but it's a long slog, you know, and there are some issues that I think are going to be really painful, you know, such as people's temporary rent benefits are going to run out before they're able to rebuild. And the insurance companies are going to have to make a decision, you know, whether they're going to bend their own rules and extend those payments or whether they're going to, you know, leave people hanging.
For NSPR News, I'm Nicole Camarda.
The next Insurance Claim Help workshop will be Thursday, April 25th. For more information, visit uphelp.org. While nonprofits and government organizations have largely been highlighted as places where those who have been displaced can get help, the Paradise community itself has been greatly involved in connecting their friends and neighbors to resources. One of those groups is Paradise Community Guilds, which has been holding weekly meetings that give information to survivors and also discuss how to rebuild the town. NSPR's Mark Albert spoke with David Leon Zink to learn more about the organization's efforts.
How's the Paradise Community Guilds been helping with post-campfire relief efforts?
The day of the fire, Chico Community Guilds is a sister organization, and they allowed us use of their hall here. So we met, folks checked in. A couple of days later, on Sunday, we met again to have a healing circle where folks can tell about their experiences and speak about their needs. And then we agreed to meet every week from then on, sometimes more than once a week, to connect, to share needs and resources, to comfort each other, and to figure out next steps. And we've been meeting every week since then in order to do that. It's been such a comfort to have folks you know meet on a regular basis, become your community, to work through the issues as they come up.
Tell me more about the Monday meetings you've been holding around redesigning Paradise.
I had identified that many of our members were wondering how they could rebuild in Paradise. And so I did some online research, because part of our mission statement is that we want to practice stewardship of nature and promote values of sustainability. And for us, that's, when it comes to building, it's green building, it's looking for low carbon footprint, it's looking for long life cycle building, the variety of things that make for a more responsible sort of way of building in this climate change environment that we're in. So I reached out to some green building expos, and that started a conversation that I think rippled out to some others. And so we began to be contacted by folks who championed solar homes, building cob houses, building with rammed earth. So we're looking at some options in that area with some of the folks that have come to present to us. We've been contacted by a cob housing maker.
And these alternative construction materials and techniques, are there people and contractors here that use that you know, have the knowledge and ability to manufacture or build a house using those products and procedures? And, you know, is it more expensive, which I think is, you know, the thing that everybody who's been burned out is obviously concerned about.
I'll take your last question first. It is more expensive to build with green building techniques. Typically, it's between 10 and 35% more expensive per square foot on a building. That's when you look at the raw costs going in. But when you look at the life cycle of a building that can be built with green techniques, typically you're looking at longer life cycles. And they tend to be more fire resilient, fire resistant. And so that's a huge factor right now in this climate change environment, where we'll have long droughts with lots of fuel that'll build up over years. 20, 30 years, we could have another fire just like the one we just had in Paradise. It could happen. So when the fire comes next time, what kind of house is going to be facing that flame? One of the reasons it costs more is simply because of one of your other questions. There's not a broad base of expertise in how to build with this stuff, and it's not broadly available. We do have some folks here in town that are fairly conversant in a variety of green building techniques, but my experience is that it hasn't been a broad base. That said, Paradise Community Guilds is doing everything it can to encourage folks to look into those areas. And so we're trying to come up with a way that folks can evaluate the differences between the standard construction models and the green construction models.
Paradise Community Guilds meets weekly on Mondays for support and education on redesigning Paradise. For more information, visit Paradise Community Guilds on Facebook. You're listening to After Paradise, a special production from North State Public Radio. More just ahead. This is After Paradise, a special production on the aftermath of the campfire from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Climate change is a topic that's increasingly becoming part of the discussion about rebuilding Paradise. And last week, it was a large focus as Chico State held its annual This Way to Sustainability conference. There, NSPR's Dave Schloem spoke with fire survivors of both the camp and car fires. Here's part of that discussion.
Well, of course, you know, everybody knows about what happened in Paradise and up at Whiskeytown in Redding. They know that you've gone through this traumatic experience, and people are, you know, they're well intentioned, but sometimes they will ask you questions or you'll get asked the same thing over and over again to the point where you're like, okay, I got to answer this again. I got to go through this again. And any of you can answer this, maybe one or two of you. Is there something that people ask you like a lot where you're just like, okay, here comes that question again?
I'll pass this on after I give my share, because I feel like something about your home, I'm sure, is a really difficult question to keep answering over and over. I get asked if I'm still a nurse, and that kind of hits home for me because a nurse is part of my identity, and I am not working in the emergency room right now. It's a hard question to answer because I take it offensively, or I'm offended by it sometimes. And I know that people are well, you know, they mean well. But that's a hard question to answer because it just really makes it very real that something was ripped away from me. And so the loss of that, you know, that hospital kind of made me the nurse that I am. And so the loss of that is really hard. And that question, I just try to reframe it, explaining I will always be a nurse no matter what I'm doing. That's part of who I am. So that question is just a little bit hard for me sometimes.
That reminds me of the all of the educators in Paradise, the teachers, you know, that had students that they cared for every day, that they were shepherding through the school year, and then suddenly to have that taken away. And your purpose every day to get up as a teacher, that you've got these kids, you've got to teach, and all of a sudden, you know, where what am I going to do? Am I going to have this job? You know, so I also feel for the educators in the community and everybody, but that was something that struck me personally.
Absolutely. I don't think I'm alone in how I feel about that question. And that's part of this, the beauty of our community is everybody, since we're all sharing this experience together, there's always somebody who can relate to your experience. So it's helpful.
Anybody else want to share any, like a misconception people have or anything? It's okay if you don't.
I just want to say that, I have not really grown tired of anybody's questions or anything, but I've been actually really very grateful that people continue to care and continue to ask me about, you know, how we're doing and what happened to us. And one of the hardest things for me has been how generous people have been. I'm not used to, you know, accepting so much generosity. And that, amazingly enough, has been so overwhelming sometimes that it's been difficult to continue to say thank you very much and accept people's generosity, because Chico just came to the rescue in so many ways. The people of this town were so amazing in so many ways that it was almost hard to handle.
Anybody else got something they really want to share?
I wanted to say, I get asked a lot about rebuilding in Paradise, and I think it's an important question, and it usually stimulates a good conversation about, if so, like, how should we rebuild? Should it be a whole new infrastructure? Should it be with sustainability in mind? Should it be with affordable housing solutions? Many people up there that have been displaced not only have nowhere to go, but sort of need an affordable solution up there. So I think the rebuilding of Paradise question is a really important one. And thinking about an opportunity now for sustainable ideas starting from scratch is something that's definitely being discussed up there.
Yeah, no easy answers there.
Could I'm so glad that you said that, because the fire that we experienced in Shasta County was not as catastrophic as what you experienced here, but that is a question that people are dealing with, obviously, where we are. And the answer is complex, and it has so many facets to it. And, you know, one of the things that has been, so my son goes to the only school that was impacted by the fire where we are out in the western side of 299. And, you know, we had like 40% of the folks who work with my husband lost their homes. All of my neighbors had their houses burned down. His teachers lost their homes. This question keeps coming up, and we know it's not the last time the fire is going to come through. And so, but people need housing now, right. And people are underinsured, and everybody's situation is different and unique. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, creating forums for there to be conversation for people to talk about their own unique experience will really help us to expand the possibility of solutions, so that, because there's not one size fits all for folks. I think that's really important. So thank you for mentioning.
I'd like to move on to one of the major themes of this conference. And, you know, it's important to realize that catastrophic wildfires have been happening in California since I was a little boy. But these fires have taken on a whole new dimension, and definitely a major player in all this is climate change. And I'd like to know what your perspectives are. Like, how has this changed your perspective on this existential threat? You know, after having experienced, you know, the direct impact of climate change in your lives.
I knew a lot about climate change. I was actually teaching a course here at Chico State in justice and global issues last semester. And so the first global issue we discussed was climate change. It seemed the most important thing to talk about. So we were talking about it all semester. I have to admit, though, that in my mind, I was thinking of this as a future problem, you know, that this was somewhere else, the ice caps or, you know, the coastal areas and, you know, the water's going to rise. I mean, all of that stuff, it wasn't really in my consciousness as a present problem the way it was after November 8th, because it came knocking at my back door and burned down my town. And that viscerally put me in a place of understanding that we are in the middle of climate change. This is not something that's coming. It's here. And that's how it changed for me.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think that, you know, we all talk about our children having to deal with it. And that's big enough to be scared, obviously. But I do agree that it is here now. And you see that with all the hurricanes and the snowstorms and everything else. And being somebody who has lived through a natural disaster, it just makes it all that more real. And I think that I've been compelled to share my story so people can hear it, because I think when you relate on a human level, that's when it hits home. And that's when people are motivated to make change. I can't stand up here and spew off a bunch of statistics on climate change, although I wish that I could. But I feel like I have a voice in that I survived, and that I can share my story and, you know, just explain that it is something that you never want somebody to have to experience. And unfortunately, it will continue to happen. So I feel like the best thing we can do is to keep it, you know, in the spotlight and keep the conversation going and do what we can to help support each other. But sometimes it's still very surreal that it's my life, even though time's moving on and things are improving and our community is growing and coming together and wounds are starting to heal, hopefully, but it's still very surreal.
Anything you guys want to add to that?
I just had a thought that had come to mind. It mm-hmm. became so very apparent. Like she had said something that, you know, you would think would be in the future or, you know, another time, another place. But the very fact that this was the first week of November and to see a fire act that way and completely, you know, at that velocity and that
ferocity.
Ferocity, yeah. That is a word. Okay. The way that fire like came through there in November and just the impact that it had directly, indirectly to so many people in this one community was really just a wake up call that, you know, the effect from climate change on our, you know, wildfires and natural disasters is it's really close to home.
That was NSPR's Dave Shloem speaking with Susan Dobra, Chelsea West, Melissa Darnell, and Luigi Balsamo at Chico State's This Way to Sustainability conference last Friday. All are survivors of the camp and car fires. You can watch the full interview at mynspr.org. And that's our program for Thursday, April 4th, 2019. After Paradise is produced by Mark Albert, Phil Wilkie, and Tess Vigeland. Adam Raguzia composed our theme music. Our engineer is Matt Fidler. Special thanks this week to Jane Lindholm. And don't forget, we want to hear your questions. Ask anything you'd like to know about post-campfire recovery at mynspr.org. After Paradise airs every Thursday evening at 6:30. Thanks for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, and this is After Paradise from North State Public Radio.